When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent, match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Good morning to you. Welcome into the Mark Cox Morning Show. This is a Wednesday. We are in a good mood today. We are filled with food, which is always cheers us up. It is
thanks to you, by the way.
The birthday of one Kim St. Ange. I did. I put my body on the line for you this morning.
I appreciate that.
I want you to know. I texted Carl at one point and said, I'm going to be late. Because I just knew I was going to be late. I was in line at the drive-thru, and there were three cars in front of me. Even though I had ordered my food on the app and it was ready already, I had to wait for them to get through the people in front of me.
You added three more words to that text, too, which I'm not going to
repeat
on here.
Do not repeat on the air. No. Remember the last time I tried to do that at White Castle? I know you're happy I didn't go to White Castle this morning. They do have good breakfast sandwiches.
That would have been mean.
You did like the White Castle breakfast sandwich.
That wasn't bad. You're right.
The last time I did this, I got down there and I found out the person in front of me at 4 in the morning was ordering like 75 White Castle sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches for some event she was going to.
I was going to go to work, but then I got high.
So I just had to leave. I couldn't hang out there and wait for all of the machine to cook all those swimmages. But anyway, it's always a good morning when you start off that way, right? It's outstanding, for sure. Coming up in the next hour, we are going to talk to Mark Harder, St. Louis County Council. If you missed it, there was some really damaging testimony, in my opinion, last night at a committee meeting regarding Sam Page and some of the dirty politics in St. Louis County, right? You know, it's not a surprise you're trying to dig up dirt, maybe on a political opponent. But in this case, one of the people in the prosecutor's office claims she took a phone call from Sam Page telling her she needed to dig up dirt on a Republican opponent prior to the election in November, Mike Archer. And she declined to do so, right? And they called her a second time and told her she needed to step up her game. And, I mean, it's all sort of in negotiation for whoever's going to get Wesley Bell's spot, it sounds like. And it's just rotten to the core. We're going to talk to Mark Harder about that. He's the one that elicited some of that testimony last night from Melissa Price Smith during that hearing. And I've got him coming up this morning at about 8:20. Next, we're going to get to Genevieve Wood. She's a senior advisor at Heritage. One of the stories they're covering is everybody might get pardons, right? Hunter got a pardon. It looks like 1,500 other people got pardons. Who knows who else Joe Biden might pardon between now and January 20th? How about all the people that have been persecuted by the Biden administration for standing in front of an abortion clinic and protesting. There are people out there in jail for that right now who took no acts of physical violence. So what happens to them? Maybe Donald Trump will consider some handing out some pardons when the time comes. We'll talk about that with Genevieve straight ahead. First, though, I want to get to this morning's top stories, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
And I ask you to remember the context in which you exist. Yeah, I did that.
Yeah, I did that. She's making fun of that SNL skit, I'm assuming, where they talked about her word salad and joked about it, and she thought this would be funny to bring this up right now. Thank goodness we're not having to face that on January 20th.
Police have now detained 14 people in reported armed home invasion. That's the same apartment complex where a lot of people were complaining about the armed Venezuelan gang members roaming the halls.
Yeah, there's a Fox reporting on what's going on out in Aurora and in Colorado, where these gang members have taken over a building. We're apparently holding hostages. Donald Trump said it was happening. The mainstream media said he was making it up. And once again, he's been proven right.
It's a total dumpster fire. I think it's garbage. This is what Washington, D.C. has done. This is why I ran for Congress to try to stop this. And sadly, this is happening again.
That's Congressman Eric Burleson from here in Missouri. He's pointing out this awful budget deal. Apparently, a deal's been struck. Mike Johnson is going to have to get Democrats to vote with him to pass the budget so they can all leave town and come home for the holidays.
Personally, I think she should run for president again if she believes she has the energy to do it.
Kim looked up at me when I played that bite. She hadn't heard that yet. CNN, MSNBC, they're all devolving into blubbering messes over there. They're upset that AOC didn't get a leadership position in Congress. Now they're looking ahead to 2028 and what's next for Kamala Harris. Before we get to that, I want you to hear Kamala yesterday. She was out talking to a group of kids. And she wanted them to know how she's handling her humiliating defeat. Go to cut two, Carl, please.
The true test of our commitment is whether, in the face of an obstacle, do we throw up our hands or do we roll up our sleeves? And as we approach...
There's the cackle. We don't
the cackle.
Miss.
What do we do? Do we roll up our sleeves? What are we going to do? Do we take the cork out of that bottle? What are we going to do? I mean, there's lots of questions there that can be answered. So, of course, immediately and upon hearing that, the morning shows on the left-leaning networks this morning are contemplating Kamala's future. Some think she should run for governor of California because, of course, everybody knows Gavin Newsom's going to run for president. Others think she should take another run at president. Do you know that, Kim? Because in reality, she didn't lose this race. The people around her lost this race. And you just need to accept that up front. This is Karen Finney, Democrat strategist, Democrat campaign manager, giving advice to Kamala Harris to maybe give it another shot if she's got the energy.
Personally, I think she should run for president again if she believes she has the energy to do it.
Do you think she could win the nomination?
I do. But I think you have to recognize, I remember, going into the second Clinton, when he was running for re-election, our chief of staff said, it's going to be like, we're going to string you up from your fingernails upside down, from your toenails upside down. That's what it is to run for president. And it's true. I mean, it's gotten only harder. But I also think you can't answer that question right now because, I would take the time, decide, do you have it in you to do it again? I do think she'd win the primary. Here's the main thing. She didn't get to run the race she would want to run.
I get she went into this late in the game, but if it were not Donald Trump running against her, she would have lost even the loss she would have faced would have been even more significant because Donald Trump was so polarizing. I do understand that quite a few people who maybe were not Republican, they actually got behind Trump, you know, in light of what happened with the attempted assassination, things like that. But there was an interesting statistic I heard about how baby boomers, of all people, voted they went 3 points more liberal this last election, which is rare because they're usually the ones who were very conservative. But those same baby boomers who voted more left on the presidential pick, they also were voting in local leaders who were conservative. So it was something about Donald Trump is the analysis I heard that maybe these baby boomers just did not like. So had it been somebody else at the top of the ticket for the Republicans, I think she would have been whooped even worse.
It would have been the fact that they're even joking about her running again cracks me up. She wouldn't have secured this nomination if she had had any competition in the primary, which they knew, so they didn't give her any competition in the primary. Have you ever played with magnets, Kim, and tried to put the two negative ends together and they just kind of chase each other around?
Mm-hmm.
That's what Kamala Harris is to most people. They want to get away from her. And the fact that Karen Finney, who has influence on the Democratic Party, thinks she could win a primary if she ran again. She only got 2% the first time she ran.
Her platform was, I'm not Donald Trump. Truly.
I know. It's true.
And that was enough of a factor for people to vote for her. Not because they liked Kamala Harris, but because they disliked Donald Trump that much.
Yeah. That's exactly how most of America feels. And I'm convinced maybe we've seen the last of her unless she gets appointed to some position in California. I'm not sure she ever wins another victory outside of that state. All right, quick break here. We're going to get to Genevieve Wood from Heritage Foundation. Talk more about a couple of big stories, including the possibility of more pardons. We'll be right back.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, you know, I've watched with some interest this story that they're now calling for an investigation of Liz Cheney because of what she did. The report out of Congress said she may face, or maybe she should face, I should say, criminal charges over her January 6th work. Now, I'm not sure it was the wisest thing for Congress to slip that report out this before the inauguration, because if Joe Biden was considering a preemptive pardon for Liz Cheney, it strikes me that would be the reason he would do it. I could be wrong about that, but the man's handing pardons out all over the place right now. Let's get to Genevieve, please.
The stars at night are big and bright. Deep in the heart of Texas.
Genevieve Wood joining us, senior advisor, of course, with the Heritage Foundation. Welcome back, Genevieve. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Mark. Good to be with you.
Yeah, good to have you back. You know, I'm thinking if they're handing out pardons, and I don't know what all Donald Trump's thinking about. I know he's thinking about some J6 pardons for people, maybe some commutations. Yep. What about all of those people who have been persecuted by the DOJ under Joe Biden, who've simply been standing up for pro-life?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, look, there's some people who are getting what I would call political pardons and real favors. There are other people who have been absolutely unfairly prosecuted, not just by the Biden administration, but them in particular over the last 4 years, just for being pro-life and doing pro-life activities. They've used a law called the FACE Act. It's been around for 30 years. It's supposed to protect both sides. Basically, it's supposed to say you can't go to, say, an abortion clinic. You also can't go to a church or a pregnancy resource center and obstruct people from entering. You can try to counsel them, but you can't, you know, get in front of them and not let them enter. You can't damage property. That's supposed to work both ways. But over the last few years, it's worked, by the Biden administration standards, really just to prosecute pro-lifers. And what we know is, especially since the Dobbs decision, Mark, the vast majority of violence when it comes to abortion has been pro-abortion forces torching pro-life clinics, doing damage at Catholic churches and other churches that are considered pro-life. That's where most of the damage has been, yet very few prosecutions have happened there. Yet you have pro-lifers, most of them women, not all, but most, sitting in jails right now and prisons because the Biden administration has gone after them for protesting outside of abortion clinics.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would hope, and, you know, I will find out, I would assume that what Trump's thinking on the J6 pardons. I read a pretty interesting piece the other day on, you know, whether pardons are right in every case, and I think they're honestly having that discussion. I don't think they're going to look at people who they know committed acts of violence and excuse them for what happened that day. I really don't think that's what's going to happen. I think it's going to come out of a sense of fairness. For in some cases, we've had people on the show who are still locked up in D.C. who haven't been tried 4 years later.
No, that's right. Well, and keep in mind, Mark, when you go back and review what actually happened on January 6th,
yes,
you realize that many of these people are there for no good reason except that they happened to be in Washington that day, and they happened to have attended maybe the Trump rally, and somebody took their picture, and it was reported somewhere that they were at the rally, and the next thing you know, they were assumed to also have been at the Capitol and storming it and everything else. And the reality is, even if people walked up to the Capitol, that's not destroying the Capitol. That, you have the freedom to walk up to the nation's Capitol. There's a lot of questions about what went on there, and a lot of people lost their reputations. They lost their businesses because people tried to out them as being violent protesters, and it simply was not the case.
We've been talking this week about how ABC News is having to fork over, what is it, $15 million because of false information that George Stephanopoulos said about Trump. Well, now it's come out, we saw this article on the Daily Signal, that ABC News is reporting false information about Trump's pick to be Secretary of Education. What's going
on
with all this?
They put out a story. Yeah, they don't like Trump, and they don't like his picks to be cabinet officials. That's what I make very clearly out of the story. And I think they also kind of, this is their kind of dying breath, is that they're like, let's just, you know, say a bunch of stuff and hope it sticks to the wall and people will not check it out. But what they said about Linda McMahon, who he's picked for his education nominee, is blatantly false. They came out and said that, and they did, I think, like an 8-minute story. In the very first minute of it, they came out and said she has no formal experience or in education or training and so forth. And the reality is she actually got a teacher's certificate of teacher training when she was in college. She's also sat on the Connecticut Board of Education.
Right.
She's also sat on this, and I think since for like 10 years, has been on the Sacred Heart University's Board of Education. And let me add one other thing, Mark, and Kim, if you don't mind. Maybe it would be good if we didn't have an education bureaucrat heading up the Department of Education if we want to dismantle it. If we think it's not being run well, if we think education in this country is not what it should be and our kids are being have greatly been disserved, then maybe we don't need to keep putting the same people in those positions. And, you know, a lot of people would tell you, one of the reasons we have the problem we have is because we aren't teaching people, we aren't putting teachers in place that are experts in English or experts in math or experts in an area. They've all gotten their degrees in education, just education.
Or,
and that's not really taking a deep dive into a particular area of expertise, which is really what we ought to be doing. Let's have somebody who really knows the subject matter well and then have them get a teacher certificate,
yeah,
as opposed to the other way around.
Or, and this will be controversial, maybe what you need at the top of the Department of Education is somebody that's actually been in a cage match before in a wrestling arena. Because Linda McMahon, I've seen the video. She was tough at one point. They put her in a cage match one time or in the ring. So that's kind of the person, the disruptor you need up there, right?
Absolutely. Of course, I'd put that person, if we could, at every agency.
Yes,
but
amen.
Absolutely. Absolutely, the Department of Education, because you have people like, you know, the NEA, National Education Association,
yep,
all the teachers' unions. These people have been bullying parents for years, saying they know better than they do about what their children ought to be learning in schools, how they ought to be taught, and on and on. And it's going to take somebody who's tough to tell those people to back down. And we have a new sheriff in town, and I think Linda McMahon will be great at it.
I think that's fantastic. Genevieve Wood, thank you as always. If we don't get a chance to talk to you next week, have a great Merry Christmas.
Hey, Merry Christmas, Kim. Merry Christmas, Mark, and all the listeners. It's great being with you guys all the time.
We appreciate you for sure. Genevieve Wood, senior advisor there at the Heritage Foundation. That's, by the way, and I'll get to more on this later, These prosecutions on J6 were persecutions. They were intentional and targeted on the part of the DOJ. I heard some more information on that yesterday that I'll share with you just a little bit later, for sure. All right, coming up, we're going to talk to the aunt of one of the Gaza hostages. Stay tuned. Yeah, welcome back. You know, on Christmas Day this year, it's also going to coincide with Hanukkah, the beginning of Hanukkah. And it kind of should bring back to our attention what's going on in Gaza and the fact that there are still hostages being held there. And I know that Donald Trump has told them there's going to be hell to pay if this isn't straightened up by the time he takes office. We pray that that has some impact on what's happening. But in the meantime, we need to remember the people that are still being held hostage there. I've got to Liz Hirsch-Naftali with us this morning, and she has got a book out called Saving Abigail. Of course, one of the real-life accounts of a family's harrowing journey through the tragedies of that October 7th Hamas massacre. And Liz, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Good morning.
Yeah, thank you for giving us a few minutes. I mean, I would hope that this hasn't left people's mind as we enter this holiday season, but as the days go by, I fear that it has.
Yes. Well, listen, it's been 440 days since Hamas invaded and murdered and killed and raped and then kidnapped innocent people. And, you know, with the news cycle, time flies and people, you know, get busy with other things. But I'm here and I wrote the book Saving Abigail to really document and make it very clear, especially for Americans, what happened on October 7th.
Yeah, well, let's talk about Abigail for a moment. Okay. How is she doing? She was held hostage for 51 days with a little 3-year-old. I can't imagine how terrified she must have been.
Yes. I mean, we have children, you know, people who are listening have little kids. And on October 7th, she and her brother and sister, 6 and 9, all saw Hamas terrorists come into their community and murder their parents, their mother and their father. And, you know, Abigail was in her father's arms when he was killed. And the 6 and 9-year-old actually thought that she had been killed, too. And they ran home and locked themselves in a closet for 14 hours. But Abigail actually survived and crawled out from her father's body and he covered in his blood and went and got help. And when she was then in somebody's home, safe, we thought, she was then taken away with this woman and her 3 kids as a hostage for 51 days. And when you ask that, like, this child literally saw all that, and then she was a hostage in a dark room with, like, no food, no water, no hygiene, and no parents for 51 days. But the beauty and the resilience of this child and children is that when she was released, thank God, over a year ago now, she was back in with her family, not her parents and not her home, because that was destroyed. But she was able to be loved, and she has, you know, her sister and her brother and her cousins, and they're all siblings now. And they live with my niece who survived the massacre of October 7th. And so while you ask how she is, if you saw her, you'd say she's this beautiful, lovely child with lots of energy. But to think what she endured is just beyond what we as people can actually comprehend.
I can't imagine that. And I think of the people who are still being held hostage. We don't even know if they're alive at this point, if they've been tortured. You hear Biden for so long, he has said, oh, you know, two-state solution and all this nonsense that we know will not work. Now you have Trump, like Mark said, saying there will be hell to pay if you do not release these hostages. How likely do you think it is that we'll be able to get them out soon?
Well, first I'll say there's 100 people, and we know that 7 of them are American. And yes, we do know that many were killed on October 7th and taken as hostages, but we also know that many were taken and are alive. And others were killed and have died under these dire circumstances. They're all in deep tunnels with no food and no air and no nothing. And, you know, right now, one of the things that we have done as hostage families, especially the Americans, is to make sure that we do keep this bipartisan. Because what we are trying to do is make sure that this doesn't become politicized. It's a humanitarian crisis. And so we do now have the Biden administration that has been unsuccessful for a year to get another deal. And now we have the incoming Trump administration, and they are doing everything in collaboration to bring home these hostages. And that has changed the dynamics. And here we are at a moment where we believe that we are much closer and close than we have been in a year to releasing these people. And you ask about how many are alive. I assume that there are dozens. And these are people, and to think what they have been enduring for 440 days
right.
of, like, not having anything, not seeing their family.
Liz, for the families that are still there, assume your niece is still in Israel?
My niece is in Israel,
okay.
And she is, you know, she was released with these women and children over a year ago.
So, but what is life like now? I mean, I would imagine if the PTSD alone must be horrible to live with, given how this went down. Is she still back in the community in her home where she was when this happened?
No. So her community is, no one lives there. No one is living along the border of Gaza. Very few have returned because it's still unsafe and because the damage was so incredible and the killing and these communities have to be, first they have to be fixed and they have to be rebuilt, but it's also not safe there yet. And so they don't live in that area. They live in the middle of the country. And people are being displaced, and many people are just living day to day trying to just make it through.
Wow. Well, thank goodness that your great niece is safe. Where can people buy the book, Saving Abigail? I assume Amazon? It's available now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and it's a book. It's a hardcover, a softcover. You can hear it audio. You can read it on Kindle. But the thing that I really remind people is, like, we're in this season of joy and lights and hope. And, you know, Hanukkah and Christmas, as you said, they are on the same day this year. And what I'm trying to remind people is, like, this is miracle time, and we need a miracle. These people who are alive still, they cannot survive. And they need to come out, and they need to come out soon. And so I am so grateful that we have the Democrats and now the incoming Trump administration and saying they must come out. And for me, this book that people can read and really understand what happened on October 7th and what happened through the eyes of a 3-year-old child and what it meant to be a hostage, but also what it meant for so many of us hostage families to do this work with the government and with leaders in Congress on both sides. But it's really this message of hope. And for me, and I thank you for having me, is like, how do we get these people home? And this book talks about what we need to all be doing, which is praying and working and elevating their stories, because it has been so long. And so I really just thank you so that people in your community who are listening will understand that this is a dire humanitarian crisis.
Yeah,
but Saving Abigail, the book, is a reminder of what we can all do to make a difference in this world.
Well said. Liz Hirsch-Naftali, thank you very much for your time, and I hope you have a as peaceful a holiday as possible.
Thank you, and God bless, and may we all see a miracle this holiday.
Yes, indeed. Thank you for giving us some time this morning. Great to get her on here. Again, if you're interested, the book is called Saving Abigail, and it is available. If you search it there on Amazon, you can find it. I get it. The people that are whose goal it is to still recover all these hostages are in the unique position of they need the Biden administration right now, and they certainly need the Trump administration, and they don't want to play partisan politics. But what we see here, what's happened here, is the direct result of negotiating with terrorists. The two-state solution that Joe Biden continues to stick to, claiming that for 30 years now that's the solution to the Middle East problem, is a failure. Because it's negotiating with terrorists. You can't do that. I've said it before. If in East St. Louis over here across the river, there was a group of folks who decided to just say we're just going to randomly lob mortars over into downtown St. Louis, how long would we put up with that? And what would we say to people who would say, well, we just need a two-state solution. We just need to give them their own territory over there, and then they would be peaceful with us. But they won't, because what we know is they've vowed to destroy St. Louis, and they're never going to give that up. How does giving them a piece of land they can call their own, which effectively was what Gaza was, how does that solve anything? It didn't. It's never worked. The only way to deal with these people is to kill them. I'm sorry. Until there's not one left standing, they will continue to try to drive Israel into the sea. From the river to the sea, they want to wipe out Israel. That's their goal. The idea of negotiating with them, I don't understand. I think Donald Trump walks into office and he says, this is what I believe he should say, if these 100 hostages or however many are still alive are not delivered to such and such place by the gate by 10 o'clock on next Tuesday, guess what? Special operating forces from the United States and Israel are going to sweep the rest of Gaza. We'll find them one way or another, and we're going to kill you when we find you. Those are your options, period. No peace talks, no ceasefire, turn them loose, or you're all dead. And that fixes the problem. I hate to be a hard butt about it, but that's it.
Well, it seems like that's what he's insinuating when he says there will be hell to pay.
I understand exactly where Liz is coming from. Somebody's got a family member over there. They all want the hostages released, but over 1,000 people have already lost their lives in this attack. It's heartbreaking. Somebody's got to put an end to it. I truly believe that. All right, coming up, Kim, what are we whimming about?
Well, just imagine going to the grocery store and you're able to pick up some eggs and some bread and maybe some ammo. An ammo vending machine at grocery stores?
Wow, a freedom seed machine at the local convenience store. I like it. We'll be right back.
Kim on a whim.
What do you think of the idea of being able to go to the grocery store and buying ammo from essentially a vending machine?
I'm all in.
There's this Dallas-based startup, American Rounds, rolled out its first, as they call it, automated retail ammo machine in a grocery store in Alabama. This was late last year and sells different types of ammo. Now it's rolled out in several states, not Missouri, unfortunately, but could. Apparently, this company has said they have had requests from every single state. Highly doubt they will go into every single state. Maybe. But they have been very popular. What you do is you go up to this machine, you click a button saying, yes, I'm at least 21 years old, not 18. In this case, you have to be 21 years old. You click a little button that says, I'm not under distress, which anybody would click yes. And then it wants you to insert your driver's license. And then you step back and there's this little camera on top of the machine. And it has instructions of how to move your head from left to right. And it's scanning your face to make sure it matches up with your driver's license. Assuming it does, then there you go. There's your ammo.
Isn't that discriminatory if I have to show my ID to purchase this?
Well, see, a lot of people don't have access to photo IDs,
Thank you. You're right.
That probably would be discriminatory.
What if I'm poor and I can't afford it and I'm too dumb to go get a driver's license or an ID, which are free, by the way? If you can't afford it, the state will give you one for free. But, you know, we're told that when it comes to voting, if you require somebody to prove who they are, you're violating their personal rights. You're stepping on their neck, so to speak.
The guy who's behind this, these machines, he says, if you were to go buy ammo and the person standing behind the counter, how are they able to tell if you're under distress? Because people even who say they support the Second Amendment and all the things, they were questioning whether these machines should really be in grocery stores, and they were worried about access and things like that, and how the machine would really know if you're under distress. And his point was, what difference does it really make? Because if you're going online to buy ammo, it's not like there's some checks and balances system for that. If you're standing at a counter, like I mentioned, it's not like, unless you're freaking out at the very moment you're trying to make the purchase, they wouldn't know that you're, you know, not in the right state of mind.
I was at Bass Pro Shop yesterday buying a Christmas gift, and I walked, of course, as I always do, back to the gun case so I can see what's available, because I like to do that. And of course, I walked past the aisle where all the ammunition is. It's all just sitting there for you to go pick a box. You take it up to the front counter. They make sure you're old enough, and they sell it to you, right? Why is this even controversial? This is the anti-gun crowd, the people that have never picked up a gun and fired it, who are convinced guns only exist to kill other people, the ignorant crowd that would be against something like this. There's no other legal reason to be against it.
I would think this machine could be more accurate in determining if you are who you say you are with your ID than the person would be behind the counter. It's like buying booze, okay? When you go buy booze and you have a fake ID, you knew the places you knew the places that were like, yeah, sure, looks like you, even though the person has the opposite color hair and eye color and all of the things.
Yeah.
So this machine, to me, actually might be stricter when it comes to how it's right, the purchase is regulated. I think people just freak out at the idea of it being so accessible. They worry about being able to go to a grocery store. It's the idea of it, I think. And then this report I found on NBC News, the reporter was pointing out how this was located right next to a school. Well, the guy, the company, got the guy with the, what was it called, American Rounds? Yeah, that's the startup that came up with these. He said, go to the hardware, go to the store just across the street that's been there for years, you know, from this school, and you can buy ammo right there. How is this any different?
No
Why
different.
Are you mad at us for putting this machine here, but that doesn't bother you at all?
Why don't you look at the fact that Joe Biden, who's among the crowd that pushes for more gun laws and more enforcement of gun laws, just pardoned his son from a case where he illegally bought a gun and then illegally disposed of the gun. He was never even charged with that. His sister-in-law / girlfriend / junkie that he got her hooked on drugs found the gun that he had purchased illegally, put it in a brown paper bag, took it to a garbage can across the street from a school, and disposed of it there, which is, all of that is highly illegal where they did it. And he's been pardoned back to 2014. So there are so many hypocrites on the left and these anti-gunners who want to make a big deal over something like this when it's just a matter of convenience. Number one, if you stop at the QT on your, and I love QT, no, I'm not criticizing you, but if you stop at the QT on the way somewhere and you have to buy aspirin, you're going to pay three times what you would pay if you just waited and went to a pharmacy. It's a convenience item. Mm-hmm. I'm sure this ammo is going to cost more than normal ammo would cost because it's convenient. It's in a machine for you, but you I just don't think that many people are going to use it.
I didn't see how much it costs, but I bet you're right. It's in eight stores right now in Alabama, Oklahoma, Colorado, and Texas.
Yeah.
But like I mentioned, this company says they've had requests from nearly every single state. In fact, apparently they have 200, where was that? 200 contracts, I guess, they've already signed. So it sounds like these will be going in more stores. The question is where.
Amen. I want to know when one comes to Missouri. I want to reach out to that guy, and we can break the news when it's coming to Missouri.
It'd be interesting to just have him on.
I know. That's a great interview.
American Rounds is the company.
Let's get him on here and talk about it. I'm all in favor of, I wouldn't mind having my own Freedom Seed machine right in the house.
Freedom Seed.
Oh, it's awesome. Secure.
Did you come up with that?
No, not at all. Not at all. Not at all. In fact, our ancestors did during the Revolutionary War. That's when they first started spitting Freedom Seeds. All right, coming up, we're going to talk to Mark Carter of the St. Louis County Council on the dispute over a new prosecuting attorney.
Get more at 971talk.com.